There is no free lunch when it comes to investing, but what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to The Free Lunch, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast with Karen and Colin. Welcome back, Karen.
Well, thank you, Colin.
I think we were on last week together too, right?
And the week before.
Yeah. So, well, welcome. For those that don't know, in our podcast, firstly, as we just mentioned, it's a free podcast. So if you don't like it, don't listen. There's other things you can listen to. We like it, but we try to talk about things that are educational at times. We try to have good guest speakers when we have them. And we also try to spread the word of markets, right?
Yes.
And so today we're going to talk about markets because markets are in the headlines all the time. And the focus these days for many investors has been on what's happened between February and April or May. But we need to help people look beyond that.
Right.
So there's this old adage about sell in May and go away. Now, if somebody did that this May, well, they missed out on, 4% rate of return on the month to date. So that's not really a good adage to follow.
No, right? It's not. We are here to bust some myths, shed some light, and educate.
Yeah. So that sell in May and go away, I mean, as I said, it is an old adage. There are lots of old adages around us. Some of them are relevant, some of them are not. This one's always bugged me. You know, people say, well, you know, sell in May, skip the summer, come back in the fall. And comes from a historical pattern of weak summer performance in markets. But we're going to kind of bust that today.
Yeah, because, well, should we just dive right in?
Yep.
Okay, yeah. Let's start with the sell in May and go in. We've got a couple of other myths that we're going to bust. But this one, the data doesn't always back it up. And we're going to give some examples, shore up our findings, and again, the myth busters. But over the past 10 years, if we're looking at the S&P market, we've seen positive returns in the May through October period in 7 out of those 10 years. Mm-hmm. And even last year, 2024, we saw 9% increased between May and October.
So I hope people didn't sell in May then and wait till October because they missed out on 7 out of 10 years of positive performance. That's pretty significant, right? So right now, the S&P 500 is trading just under 6,000 points. And, you know, for those that don't know, think of points like dollars, right? Like that's how I always like to get people to think of it. Like it's $6,000. And a year ago, it was 10% less than that, right? So even though we've been through this Trump trade or post-Trump trade where we hit a new all-time high in February, and then it sold off, and all the emphasis is on that area. If we go back over the last 12 months, the S&P 500 is up 10%. So, and it is also above its 200-day moving average, which for those technical analysts out there is a bullish technical signal.
Yeah, and Canadian markets tell a similar story. S&P TSX Composite Index hit 25,600 just recently. And it's been buoyed up by commodity strength and also a rebound in financials. And when we take a look at what's happened over the last 12 months, that's around a 15% return. So
I'd take 15% any 12 month period.
It's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you go back a year, so back to May of 2023, if somebody had sold out in May, they would have missed out on a strong rally in tech and energy stocks during the summer with oil prices rebounding and something called artificial intelligence fueling U.S. tech giants.
Never heard of it. Perhaps we can dig into that a little bit more.
Well, I use it every day now. Do you? I love generative AI. I use it for everything. Everything.
Well, brushing your teeth.
Well, no, like not physical things. Okay. But like even just planning events now. Like you can drag, I'm getting off topic, but you can drag documents into generative AI and ask it to refine it for you. It's unbelievable.
Anyways. Nice. So coming back to the sell in May and go away, we're in a different rate environment now. So central banks are talking about rate cuts, not hikes. And that's historically good for equities. So I think we're going to still see some nice upticks.
Yeah, I agree. And it's a great point. I mean, with fiscal stimulus still flowing and job markets remaining resilient in both Canada and the U.S., basically the macroeconomic backdrop is a lot stronger than people think during these so-called quiet months.
That's right. And let's not forget the taxes and transaction costs that often come with constant trading. By staying invested, especially if you have a diversified portfolio, this tends to beat these gimmicks. And this is not the first time that we've talked about this. So unless you have a crystal ball or the magic eight ball, trying to game the market based on the calendar does more harm than good.
For sure, for sure. Now, we've seen something happening in the last few months where people have started to talk about international markets a bit
more. Yes.
Yeah, because of what's happened in the U.S. with the tariffs and non-tariffs and what I call a ceasefire on tariffs, which is what we're in right now, potentially. But there is this other myth that global markets follow the same seasonal trends as the U.S., but that's not always the case. And Europe's been a pretty surprising area this last year. It's bounced back in Germany with a GDP growth rate expected of 1.2%. That's not bad.
That's not bad. And the European Central Bank is signaling its first rate cut since the pandemic era. And that's lifted equities across the Eurozone, especially in banking and industrial sectors as well. If we take a look at the STOXX Europe 600 Index, which covers 17 countries and 11 industries, it's up, I think, like over 8% since January. So, you know, we've seen analysts, they've been raising their 2025 year-end targets, and they're citing reduced geopolitical tension and an improving economic outlook.
Well, and I'll take us on a side note here. I was listening to somebody on Bloomberg the other day, and they were talking about 2008 was all about monetary policy. And at times it's all been about fiscal policy, which are different things. And right now it's all about political policy. And so that's happening. So that 8% since January, that's actually a really strong number. That's like 4 months, right?
Correct.
So annualize that out, I'd take that return too, right? But let's not forget about the UK, because the UK is it's a big market. And despite having gone through Brexit, the FTSE 100 is up over 7% this year. Again, driven by commodity stocks. And emerging markets have been resilient too. The iShares MSCI Emerging Markets ETF, ticker EEM, is up nearly 1% this week alone and about 6% year to date.
The future looks bright.
Yeah.
In addition to that, we're also seeing strength in Latin American and Southeast Asian markets, especially. Lower interest rates and stronger commodity demand are helping them outperform. So India's Nifty 50,
The Nifty 50
has surged past 23,000 for the first time. And Brazil's Bovespa.
Sure.
Yes. The Bovespa index is benefiting from rising iron ore and also agricultural exports. If we take a look at Southeast Asia, Vietnam and Indonesia are growing at more than 5% GDP annually. And this is attracting more foreign direct investments as supply chains shift away from China.
China. China. Oh. It's bigly. You heard him say that?
Yes.
We get some bigly problems in China.
You do that very well.
Yeah, I guess what this points out is that some of those markets, like I've never talked about Brazil's Bovespa index in my life until just now.
Right.
But it's because these are fringe markets that we don't normally talk about in Canada.
Right.
But they're not fringe markets anymore. So for long-term investors, they do offer diversification and growth that you might not find in mature markets. And it just proves that relying on these old seasonal trends can cause you to miss opportunities abroad. And it just points out how diversification is so critical to a portfolio.
Yeah, absolutely. And along with the sell in May and go away, there's often this myth called the summer slump. And it's essentially saying that summer is a bad time to invest. And it assumes that low trading volumes, vacationing traders, and also institutional investors that are gone for the summer leads to poor returns. Is that the case?
No,
No. Good. I'm on the right podcast.
There's no clear pattern there. So again, going back a couple of years, 2021 and 2023, summer months actually saw solid gains in U.S. and Canadian markets. And the Canadian Real Estate Investment Trust, for example, gained nearly 6% during those summer months alone. And now that's interesting to me because REITs have been under a lot of pressure since COVID.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's like, well, who wants to rent office space? Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like a lot of people do, right? And so those markets are doing pretty well.
They're coming back.
Yeah.
And right now, with inflation easing and interest rate cuts expected, investors are optimistically heading into these summer months.
Mm-hmm.
In both the U.S. and Canada, CPI data has come in lower than expected. And that's reigniting interest in growth sectors. And that's also part of why the TSX has already gained over 10% this year.
These are just great numbers.
I know. What's all the fuss?
I don't know. You know, it's just the headlines. Mm-hmm. It's just these short-term headlines. Because even if you look at things like technology, which often performs well in low-growth environments, it's driving a lot of this momentum, right? So you've got names like Shopify and Lightspeed, which are making a comeback. And consumer spending hasn't dropped off. Retail sales are solid, especially when you look at things like travel and leisure. I know we were in Hawaii a few weeks ago. I can tell you, we helped the travel and leisure market out significantly because it's expensive to travel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. So if anything, think of summer as having a unique entry point. Volatility can create these pricing mismatches that long-term investors can take advantage of. So rather than fearing the summer, use it as a time to review your allocation and maybe top up your investments if the fundamentals are strong.
Right. Now let's get into tariffs a bit because, again, China, the bigly tariffs. anyways, tariffs are a tax on your own people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this idea that they will always tank markets, but tariffs are actually also part of kind of normal, right? So it's not the fact of having tariffs that creates market negative movement. It's, well, what kind of tariffs are we talking about? And so, you know, there was a time in President Trump's first term where in 2018, the U.S. market was on fire. And then in the last quarter, he got into a trade war with China. And it sold off in the last quarter. So the S&P 500 ended up down 6% that mm-hmm. year. But in 2019, it roared back.
And here we are again.
Yeah.
What was that great saying that you had? History doesn't repeat itself, but...
But it certainly does rhyme.
Right.
Yes. My saying. I've stolen that saying from many people. It's a very common saying these days because you don't really know what the headlines will be, but you do know that cycles are repeatable.
Yeah, we see it all the time.
Yeah.
And investors often overreact to these types of headlines, including the tariff ones. But in practice, you know, companies adjust supply chains, they pass on costs, and they find new markets. Like, don't forget that mm-hmm. the markets are always forward-looking. The recent U.S.-China agreement to cut tariffs has also led to this relief rally, and markets responded very positively. But even before that, the markets were already pricing in a resolution.
Well, I think it's only normal to price in some sort of resolution. Like, there's no way that those tariffs in their form... Oh man, my English sucks today.
You can't ignore them.
You can't ignore them.
Right.
Yeah.
I knew where you were going with that. I was just enjoying watching you struggle.
Parlez-vous anglais. Okay. Well, let's get back to Canada. So
Canada,
a resource heavy sector economy. That's what we have, mm-hmm. right? Everybody knows it, especially mm-hmm. in Calgary. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the TSX is projected to keep rising as demand for commodities like copper and gold still remains strong. And right now, Canadian miners are benefiting from some of these trade shifts. I mean, China is seeking to reduce reliance on Australian iron ore, and Canada's Vale and Teck resources are stepping in to fill that gap.
And we should mention, we've said a few different companies' names. Are mm-hmm. we suggesting that people invest specifically in those stocks or companies?
No, never. Actually, we're suggesting people don't invest directly in individual stocks at all. We believe in diversified pools, mm-hmm. but those companies just happen to be benefiting from some of the global supply chain movement.
Yeah, and then let's take a look at agriculture, because Canadian wheat and canola exports are strong as we see this geopolitical risk redirects the demand. So even lumber is seeing a rebound. In the U.S., consumer discretionary stocks, they've held up pretty good despite tariff fears. And showing what that essentially does is it shows the underlying strength of the economy as a whole.
You know, I was meeting with a farmer recently who sells malt. Mm-hmm. And it's shipped from Alberta to Texas. And then it's turned into beer somewhere there. Then it's shipped to Mexico. And it is bottled as Corona. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
So
how do we cut out the middleman?
Well, I mean, everybody is trying to figure out how to go with the supply chain, because that's just one item. But it is so interesting to me that you could be having a Corona in Mexico that actually originated from Southern Alberta. Mm-hmm. Isn't that funny?
That is kind of cool.
Yeah. Okay. So again, not talking about headlines or reacting to headlines. It's about reading the data and just having a long-term view. A long-term view is not 6 weeks.
No.
A long-term view isn't even a year, right? It's, you know, when we start talking about time horizons, it's more than a year, because anything can happen in a year, right? Mm-hmm. Like, as much as people have called in the last few weeks when the markets were negative, they were focused on a 6 week cycle.
I remember early April when there was a lot of movement in the markets and a lot of scary headlines, and we reached out to all of our clients just to let them know that, you know, even though the markets were down 20%, pardon me, I think the worst one I saw, and it was only on one of our portfolios, it was -5%.
Yeah.
And I got so many responses back from our clients saying, hey, I'm in this for the long run. Like, they weren't even paying attention. And I was like,
yeah,
that's the way to do it. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. And we have to take our own advice. And we have a person on our team. She will remain unnamed, but her name's Martina. she said to me, what should I do? I said, just don't look at your statements for a while. And she did.
Yeah.
And I think that that's always good advice when you go through those short-term market movements. Like, hey, maybe don't look at April's statement. What's the point? You know, just stay invested.
So here's an interesting one, because it ties in directly with what we're talking about, because there is another myth that says buy the dip, it works every time. And, and this is popular with retail investors and social media.
Yeah.
These finfluencers, there's been a lot of noise in the news about how they are being charged by regulatory bodies.
Because they're not licensed to give advice. Right. I mean, even, you know, I used to listen to this one podcast. It's a marketing professor, and he would often give individual stock advice.
All the time.
I was like, how can he do that?
All the time.
You're not licensed to talk about those stocks.
Did he get in trouble?
Well, he should get in trouble, but I don't know if he just uses a disclaimer or something, right. But yeah, anyways.
I know exactly who you're talking about. But back to this buy the dip, because it works every time. It assumes that every dip is followed by a quick rebound. And we know that that doesn't always work. Mm-hmm. So buy the dip worked well during the ultra low rate QE-driven bull markets from 2009 to 2020. But we're not in that same situation now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be about, and this is going to sound awful. You know, when you'll see analysts and they'll talk about individual stocks, and they'll use phrases like they've got good management. Mm-hmm. They've got a good balance sheet, right? Strong dividends and earnings. And as much as I like to make fun of those things, because it's one of the things that always bugs me is like, well, what constitutes good management? Mm-hmm. I don't know if that company has good management. I don't know what that means. But I guess what it means is that you need to look for quality, right? And so now in our case, we're never going to suggest to somebody that they buy an individual stock because of good management. But we will suggest to people that they buy a diversified pool of factors of return that work over long periods of time that include good companies in it, right?
Agreed.
Yeah. So, you know, anything can happen to any sector. I mean, look at 2022 as a cautionary tale. Tech stocks dropped early in the year, and investors who bought the dip in Q1 were still down 30 to 40% by Q3. Mm-hmm. So 6 months later.
Yeah.
So they bought the dip and it went down.
Yeah.
To a new dip.
Because you can't time the markets.
Market timing doesn't work.
But what you can do is have a disciplined approach. And when we talk about doing this disciplined approach, it's all about dollar cost averaging or investing based on, as you said, valuation. Mm-hmm. And this can help you avoid chasing those losses.
Yeah, so right now, Canadian equities have better valuations than U.S. stocks.
Yes.
Which is interesting and also irrelevant at the mm-hmm. same time, because the Canadian market is only 3% of the world's market. So I don't know if this is a great point, but, you know, we're often telling people like don't have 90% of your money in Canadian market because it's only 3% of the world. You should really be diversified globally. I'm not sure where I was going with that, but I'll just leave that note there.
Just leave it hanging.
The rest of the world is more bigly than the Canadian market. Like actually, Apple is the same size as the entire Canadian economy. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty staggering statistic. Mm-hmm. You know, so when you have things like tariffs impacting profitability of Apple, that affects more people in the world than whatever happens in our economy.
Right.
Crazy, eh?
Yeah, it's shocking. We are the opposite of bigly. Is this what you're saying?
Yeah, that's right. We are not bigly.
But
So
also think about currency play, right?
Yeah.
Because a strong U.S. dollar makes the Canadian exports more attractive, and that can benefit Canadian stocks.
I'll pick that up while you cough. It can benefit Canadian stocks. Yeah. What about some final thoughts on this? We're going to run out of time here soon.
Yeah. Market myths. You know what? They're catchy. They sound really cool. Some of them even rhyme, right?
Yep.
But they're not strategies. And if anything, they distract you from what really matters. And what really matters is staying invested with a purpose.
Yeah. I mean, there's tons of cute sayings out there. The whole go and sell it may go away is one of them. I think it was Mark Twain that said, the hardest month to invest in the market is I'm going to butcher this, July followed by August, followed by September, followed by October. And he just names off all of the months. And I know I butchered that. But what we're going to tell people is like, look, stay invested. Understand risk and how much risk is in your portfolios. Stay globally diversified. I mean, if there's one takeaway from what's happening right now in the global supply chain, is that it is opening up other markets to other countries. So even in Canada, we're getting interprovincial trade that we didn't have prior to these tariffs being announced. That's pretty interesting. But so getting back to the point, let data drive your decisions, not calendar cliches.
Yeah. And so the best investment strategy is the one that you stick with, whether it's through May, through the summer, or through whatever the headlines say.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, I think that's good.
That's not bad.
That was a good one. That was fun.
That was, they're always fun.
This one was more fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was bigly fun.
It was bigly fun. All right. Well, I guess then till next time.
Till next time. Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. Canvas Wealth is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy cannot be guaranteed and is subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals and do not represent the opinion of Q Wealth as a firm.